senior game is playing down there at full forward.
And 6'8" of him.
It'll be interesting to see just how well that young kid goes, because he's got a pretty big reputation.
Hand pass back to Ronnie Andrews. Let's see what he can do with this one. It's a kick over the centre half forward line, looking for Salmon, and he's got it. He'll pay the mark, even though Copping tried to break clear. Now this kick by the big, tall forward, Ruckman, Salmon, got the world on his shoulders for this kick, Bob. Let's see what he can do with it. Taking his time. And of course the difference now, 6 points in favour of the Swans. There's the kick. And I think he's kicked the goal, so scores at dead level.
Salmon again, he'll put them in front if he can score here. It's a goal. Goal, 2 goals to 7 in 45 seconds.
A big, tall ruck forward, that's Paul Salmon. That was the voice of Lou Richards, of course, for calling with Peter McKenna. Peter Landy, calling the day in 1983, round one at the SCG, when Sydney defeated the Bombers by one solitary point. It was the debut of our next guest on the program as we go back down to memory lane on The Breakfast Club. Paul the Fish Salmon joins us. Fish, good morning to you.
Good morning, Daniel. Great to hear your voice, mate. Morning, Adam. How are you, buddy?
I'm going well, going well.
So, Daniel, you at home, are you, mate?
I'm at home, yeah. Yep.
Where are you sitting? Can you set a visual up for me there or not?
Well, you know, when you come into the house and you turn right and you go past my bedroom into the study, that's where I am, sitting up there on my desk.
Oh, you still have the nice lavender wallpaper going on in there?
Yeah, the lavender's still there.
What are you wearing, mate?
What are you wearing?
I've got a gown on.
I haven't.
it's ridiculous. It's good to be chatting. Love that.
It's nice to be chatting. And about the day that you made your debut and became this household name that you now are, although Lou wasn't quite sure what to call you. Big, tall, forward ruck.
And that remained with me for the next 20 years. The inability to describe exactly what it is that I do out there. It was always a grey area, mate. But Lou actually came up to me a year later after I started going okay, and he said, I'm going to call you Sockeye. And he said, stick with it, because it's going to make you millions. I said to him 10 years later, I said, Lou, when do you reckon the till's going to kick over, mate? I'm not sure it's catching on.
I'd forgotten about Sockeye. That's very... why do you be all over that? But I'd forgotten about Sockeye,
no,
Sam.
I had never heard that.
Well, no, he was... he tried to make a stick, because, you know, without sounding too pretentious, the headlines were Sockeye, Sam, and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, he said, I've nicknamed the Flying Doormat, the Flying Dutchman. I've done this, I've done that. He said, I'm going to call it now. Sockeye's going to be there. The running gag with Lou and I every time I saw him was... You're pooping off the mark there, Lou.
what was that day like, though, for you? Because you did say through the call you've got a big reputation coming into that game. You're 18, you were 6'9", whatever your bloody are, your massive unit, and you did have a big reputation. You were on the big stage for the first time. How were you feeling that day? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do, actually. It was a funny sequence of events. She did tease me with the possibility of some games in late 82, but Essendon at that time were... had a lot of momentum into finals, got knocked out twice in elimination finals in 81 and 82. So 83 was shaping up as a really year for the pride of the footy club, you know, and hopefully a big step. So that was the expectation on the club as a whole. But, you know, I've been dreaming of this moment, you know, like a lot of kids who take their football to bed, and sadly still do. So I kind of played this game so many times, as you all did before your first game. It was a Sydney game, as you know. So in those days, it was a day trip. We flew up in the morning, so it was quite an early start. One of my favourite people in the world, Darren Daisy Williams, picked me up. But Daisy drove an orange 240 Z Datsun, and it was it wasn't the most comfortable ride into the airport. I got to be honest. So I had the knees up on the dashboard, and I got in the car, and Daisy said, "Oh, we've got to pick up someone on the way," and I won't name this guy, but this is my first game, and it was quite surreal because we had to pick up a teammate on the way to the airport, and we tooted the horn out the front. There was no answer. Tooted again, no answer. Tell a long story short, we decided to go in and get him. The front door was slightly open, or side door, so we went in and had that strong smell of card night about it, you know, carpet, chips on the floor, packets empty, stubbies, which was kind of really for me. I'd been so professional up to that point. And then the shower was running, so I thought, great, that individual's ready to go. So Daisy said, get him a little bit of cleaning up. So I went in there, and the individual I was looking for was actually in the spa asleep. And it was someone else in the shower. This is the day of my first game. Anyway, we got him up, and we got him in the car, and he grabbed a ham slice and I think it was a cheese slice too. I don't know. But anyway, he had to
what was in his fridge, Paul? What was in his fridge?
Well, there wasn't a lot in his fridge, Daniel. The stubby six packs used to come in the plastic wrapping.
Yes.
There was a couple of strays on the lower shelf. There was a half a loaf of bread. I remember quite well. A pretty dusty looking bottle of sauce. Half a litre of milk. And this slice of ham. And it took a while, and he made his decision, and he did take some fluids from the fridge that wasn't the milk, and we got in the car and we went, and anyway, I was kind of just locked into this game, and we got to the airport, we were a smidge late because of what of the proceedings had taken place, and we got up there, and it all went really well from there, what I remember of the game is not a lot. I know Rod Carter he fascinated me because not only was he an angry person, but his name was Tilt because he had his head on the side, and I was fascinated by that. And it kind of distracted me a lot during the day as he was walking. But he was also pretty mean to me on the day. For a young boy cutting his teeth, and so I just remember being so excited, bouncing around. My first kick was a left foot scrubber out in the full, but it was just so exciting. And then to wrap it up, we lost by the point. We got on the plane, and this was round one, of course, and something happened on the plane where it created a bit of a chuckle amongst the boys, and at the time, Sheeds was getting on the plane. And I mean, what I won't ever forget was the moment Sheeds yelled at everyone on the plane for quiet, and he said, if I see you guys laughing after a loss again, he said, you won't play at this footy club. And he was looking at me right down the barrel, right in my eyes. And I've never forgot that moment where he kind of singled me out because I didn't mind a chuckle even at that age. And maybe I was loud, but certainly all the boys were behind me. And, I just remember that moment where, he set the season up from a one-point loss. And, we went on to make the grand final, but unfortunately didn't get the chocolates.
Are you saying that he stopped the whole plane? He shushed the whole plane?
Shushed the plane, yeah. He said, oi, yeah. He was angry about the loss. And he didn't like the fact that, as you would have. But Sheeds in 83 is not anywhere near the Sheeds of today, of course. You'd like to mellow over a period of time. But he was, he was very, in retrospect, he was very, obviously very keen to set the tone for the season. And that was that losses, no matter how or what size, were unacceptable. There's nothing like an honourable loss. So, the message was loud and clear, and as it was all year. And as, at the end of the year, after the savage loss to Hawthorn in the grand final, he made some changes to some really important people who have been on the list for a long time. And, of course, the rest is history. We went on to have a bit of success. But the games like that set that era up, no doubt in my mind.
What was he like to you, Paul, in the way that... Because, I mean, he had these unique relationships with his stars. He used to pump up players and make them superstars of the competition, but used to ride a lot of them really hard at the same time. What was the relationship like that you had with him, and did it change along the way?
Yeah, no, it was good. I went out to Esther when I was 15 still, and I turning 16, I was 6'6", and I think, I wasn't ready for the big jump to local senior footy, and so I was looking for that exposure to that level of football. So starting the under-19s made a lot of sense. Kevin brought me into the senior squad for training a fair bit, and at the time I was playing state footy and fortunate enough to get that exposure with guys that would go on to play a lot of footy over the years, like Andrew Buse and Dimmitt Burton and Gary Pert and all these sorts of guys I got to play with in those days. So Sheed was nurturing. He brought me over to his place to meet his family a lot. I remember he drove me out to his vacant block of land in Park Orchards, and he said, this is what you want out of your footy career. And I'll never forget moments like that where he was, he certainly took me under his wing a fair bit. But he was a scary bloke, and certainly to a young bloke, and I was very impressionable with it. And being 15, he kind of became a second father. And so when the alternative father comes down on your heart, which he had to at times, it's taken hard, but it's also taken in the right way. And then the relationship evolves, as you said, Whitey, over a period of time, and you mature, and you're now in front of a vice captain at the footy club, and you've been there a long time, and you know, you've got your own personal expectations of what you want out of your career, and he's got his obligations to the team and the footy club, and sometimes they don't always marry up. And although as a leader of the club, you want the best for the footy club, in my personal case, I'd sort of been playing an apprenticeship role, just the great Simon Madden, for a long time. So, you know, sometimes you're not always aligned, but, you know, I've got a lot to thank Kevin for over the years. And if I can indulge you one little anecdote, when I was 15, 16, he had a group of 40 of the best Essendon juniors from around the country. You know, they used to drag them from zones in those days, so the Wimmera and the local zones. And he got us in a group, and I'll never forget his little speech. It was to a bunch of young kids, and he said, "What's the most important muscle in the body?" And, you know, we're all putting our hand up, and we're all trying, we're all rocking out. You know, I went with the pecs first up. I had to go to pecs. the boys went through everything. I think the whole, you know, I think the coverage of the musculoskeletal system from a bunch of 16-year-olds, very impressive. Kevin actually, at one stage, enough, you're not going to get it. He said, the most important muscle in the body. So do you give up? And the boys said, yeah, we give up. And he said, the most important muscle in the body of football in the football career is going to be your tongue. And we go, oh, shit, damn it, he's good, right? and so we couldn't wait to hear why the tongue was the most important muscle in the body. And he went on to say that, you know, in 100,000 people at the G in a big game, or 30,000 at Windy Hill, your teammates have got to be able to hear you. If they can't hear you, you're no good to them, okay? So he went on to give us some examples. That was great. He said, the next one was, what's the most important skill in football? And the boys lit up. You know, the hands went up. Of course, I went for the difficult banana kick from the boundary. And the boys just went through every potential possible skill in football. None of us got it. He got frustrated. He said, you're not going to get it. He said, give up. So we gave up. And he said, the most important skill in football was listening. Right. And we all go, oh, damn it. Wow. that is impressive. And so he went on to talk about how important listening is, particularly, you know, being able to a coach and learning and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, these are things that made huge impressions on me. So, you know, tongue and listening became a big part of what I tried to be good at, you know, talking, communicating and listening. And, well, you know, I never quite got that right. But, you know, these are things that leading up to your first game, you kind of, you know, you're sort of drilling through your mind all these kind of big major impressions the coaches had. But Whitey, you know, it's sometimes a rocky ride, mate, but I love the man. He didn't always get it right with me, but he got it right enough to make my career a very, you know, satisfying one.
Well, I reckon at 48 points down at quarter time, he might have been using his tongue a bit, Sheeds, that day. 48 points down at quarter time, Fish.
Is that right, my first game?
Yeah, they kicked 8-2 to 2 points at quarter time.
I had no idea. It had nothing to do with me, half.
Huh? No, you weren't getting any ball inside forward 50.
Well, I was trying to be constructive from the goal. I swear, I was saying, boys, if there's any chance you could just nurture it down to my end, I might just be able to do something for you. But other than that, you're on your own. So I went in and I'd washed my hands by the time I got to the huddle, because forward has absolutely zero impact on that situation. Simon was the master of selective deafness, so he wasn't changing out of the ruck. So, and clearly, all I can assume from that point forward, we started getting it forward into the arc, and the forwards started to do our job, and we made a game of it. That's all I can deduce from that scenario, mate.
Well, yeah, 2 goals, 1 for you, and you brought them level late in the game, and then you hit the front.
Oh, it was exciting. Yeah, I remember it being exciting, the run home. I definitely wanted to win the first game, of course, not for all selfish reasons, but, you know, it would have been a great memory. Of course, mum and dad, the whole family, you know, watching from home, because getting to Sydney in those days, you know, you had to pedal. So plane tickets were way out of the mark for the Salmon family. So it would have meant a lot leading into the next game, which was, I'll never forget, which was my second game, St Kilda at Windy Hill. My first time in the cauldron at Windy Hill, playing on the baddest man I remember in my footy career, Jeff Saru, and that was a memorable game for that reason. But Jeff went on to be one of the nicest blokes I've ever met. They always do, don't they?
They always do.
The meanest blokes on the footy field turn out to be the nicest blokes off it. So we didn't get up on round one, mate. But it was also Bomber Thompson's first game.
It was.
We'd come up through down to 19s together in reserves, and we were sharing some really special moments together at that stage, and then we went on to be captain and vice captain of the club many years later. So our careers sort of had a similar trajectory, and it was a special time.
I love the fact you've mentioned round one, your game one and game two. Look, we haven't got time for 324 stories, but we...
Well, do you want to put something on? Well, what do we have?
I was going to say, we may have time to go through
yes, we might.
Every one of your games.
We might give you a call every morning just for a 5-minute story on the sequential numbers.
I think I've got one for each round.
I reckon you might. How is Vander, by the way, these days? Because he's obviously come a long way from that trip to Sydney.
he's a wonderful... And look, he's good. I thought I wouldn't bring any baggage to the interview, but he's one of the greats.
Well, there was a cryptic clue in that. The spa and the albatross pool sort of gave it away.
I should know better.
Fish, it's great to chat at any time of the day, any time and any reason. And it's always a pleasure to have you on our program, mate. We wish you very well. I look forward to catching up with you soon, and appreciate your time this morning.
Hey, can I just quickly ask, if I come on every once every 2 years, does that make me a regular?
We'll put you on the payroll.
Appreciate it.
Send your invoice to Joe. Good on you, mate. Good stuff. Paul Salmon, the great fish.